From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Yes, it's the Mark Haney Show on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution right here in the hometown we love. We do that by building the Backyard Advantage, which is becoming the most connected community in the world for local entrepreneurs. It's based around this culture of love. Entrepreneurs helping entrepreneurs, venture capitalists helping entrepreneurs helping venture capitalists. But I think it's possible to bring people together in an effort like the Backyard Advantage when we're all pretty much in close proximity. So today on the show, we have, I'm actually really excited about today's show because we started our show 10 years ago. And so this is kind of like our 10-year anniversary. In the first year, I was really, really nervous about doing the show. And so I had guests on my show that would help calm me down a little bit. And I had, that first year, I had Lisa Hansen on my show, and she was growing. She was growing a business called Growing Brilliant, and so we talked about that. We'll talk more about that today. She's brought along her husband Zach, who he's known as an angel investor around Sacramento. They've obviously done well with Growing Brilliant, and so we'll get their story about how they built a business, had a very successful exit, and now are reinvesting back into the Sacramento area. And so there'll be some lessons along the way. And hopefully we get to talk a little bit about early childhood development, because that's, to me, that's super interesting. So with that said, blah, blah, blah. Welcome to the show. How you doing, Lisa?
Great. Yeah. Thanks for having us.
You too. Zach, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm fantastic. I'm happy to be here, Mark.
Okay. Thank you. I'll start off the question from Lisa. So in the last 10 years, a lot has changed. Maybe give us a little bit of, you know, where you were 10 years ago and to where you are today, and then we can talk about the future.
Yeah, for sure. So we started out, our business was in 2013, so pretty much the year we got married before All right. we had any kids. We started out pretty small. We were just a parent participation center in Rockland and had parents coming to classes with their children and learning with their children. They had playtime before and after class, and then we would do like a more structured lesson with them, kind of a circle time as a group with the parents. And then the kids would have more time to engage and play with each other. And that business grew into our 4 in-person schools that we opened. We had one in, our first one we opened was in Roseville. So we had Roseville, then pretty much at the same time acquired a school in Folsom. And then we eventually opened a school, which was interesting. It was a build from the ground up that we helped like actually create the blueprints for. And we're able to design that one from the ground up in Natomas. And then eventually then worked our way into Granite Bay. So we had 4 locations in the Sacramento area.
And maybe talk to us about what was unique about the business, and then you had the 4 locations, and then what happened? You ended up having an exit. You ended up selling the business?
Yeah. So it wasn't necessarily the plan from the start, but our plan was definitely to grow and, you know, keep growing as long as opportunities presented themselves. So that's how we ended up with, you know, 4 schools and from where we started. And then had the exit in 2021. So that was a very long process and talked to a lot of people, a very interesting process to go through, but definitely ended up being a great thing for our families.
So, that's great.
Yeah.
And Zach, you and I were talking before the show about that exit process. Maybe what role did you have in the business prior to selling it? And then during the exit, maybe describe what that process, maybe we can learn from that.
Oh yeah, definitely. So we were together, you know, in lockstep and in the whole process from building it to running it and through exit. So yeah, we were the team. It was her and I, which is a really cool thing to do with your wife. It can,
especially at newlywed, you just get married, then you jump in. So just something that most people would call stressful.
Stressful is the absolute right word. Not only newlyweds, first time, you know, real business owners. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, we had our first child all at the same time. Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh.
And we were building out a new location. First time we had ever done that as well. So we, you know, over time, we had really found our lanes though, right? Mm-hmm. And in the beginning, we weren't sure what our lanes were. who does marketing, who does staffing, who's going to manage the build out, who's going to handle curriculum. And then there's all of the regulational pieces to it, right? Mm-hmm. So we didn't have that figured out in the beginning, but over time we absolutely found our lanes.
Mm-hmm. And what was your lane?
There was a bunch. So marketing, facilities,
okay,
anything to do with build outs. I helped out a lot with processes. I'm a very processes orientated type of a person. And I kind of thought, bigger picture, how do we expand more from the business lens of it and from a quality lens of it. And then, Lisa really handled kind of more of the in-school. So the staffing, the safety, and things like that.
I went back through and listened to that show, as I mentioned, and one of the things that I remembered after listening to it was that you had that team and culture was a big part of the success that you were having, and that I had met you at a at like an awards type of thing, and one of the things that stood out to me was the people and that the way they spoke about you and that kind of thing. So maybe any lessons learned about the building the business besides staying in your own lane or finding lanes, and then maybe we can walk through the exit process, whatever you can share on that as well, because that can be pretty educational too, I would assume.
Yeah. I think it came kind of naturally for us as we got going, because the things he's interested in and does well in are the things that I would prefer to not have to deal with in terms of a business. The marketing and the business side and the processes and kind of the more analytical stuff. But I'm more, boots on the ground, want to get in there with the kids and the teachers and really focus on the staffing and the quality.
Well,
of the program.
You're a doctor of education?
Yes.
So does Zach call you doc?
Oh, doctor? Yeah.
Does everybody call you doctor?
Yeah.
Do they?
No.
She requests it. She demands it.
Yeah. That's awesome. I didn't know that. Have you, so were you a doctor of education? Is that what it is called? Doctor of education?
Yeah.
When you first started the business, so you already had those kind of chops?
No. I had my master's in education, and I was an elementary teacher before this. So kind of went into it knowing that I was passionate about, continuing to learn, and I was in the doctorate program. So that was the goal all along. It took me a really long time to finish, just because I was running the business and had a baby in the process. But I finally graduated in 2018. So it took me about 7 years
and
to
finish. Your baby now is about 10, 9 or 10?
11.
11?
Yeah,
okay, so
11.
I met her at last year's Super Bowl party. Yeah. And what a beautiful young girl that was good with other kids, too. Whatever you've done to raise. You have another child, too, don't you?
Yeah, we have a three-year-old, too.
So raising these kids, you've obviously done its work, because she was really good with the other kids that were running around the party. Mm-hmm. And that stood out to me, and I wasn't surprised, but it stood out. So that was cool.
She came up through the Growing Brilliant, program. She was test case one, right?
Yes.
through the entire program.
Yeah, so. She was 8 months when we opened she hadn't been born when we opened the Rockland location, but we opened our first in-person preschool. She was 8 months in the baby room and coming to work with us.
That's so cool. Okay, so selling the business. A lot of times people will hire a broker, a business broker, or a investment banker or something like that to walk me through like what happened that prompted you to take that journey, go down that path.
Yeah, well, first it was, we weren't planning on selling, right? This was during COVID, and for the entire country and world, it was an extremely crazy and obviously stressful period of time. But we had, potential acquirer come up to us, again, not really looking to sell the business, and made us an offer. And it kind of, got us thinking. There were some things going on in the preschool landscape that are, still showing effect now. Different legislation happening where they're basically moving the preschool industry from private owners, like we were, into the public sector. So there was a lot of legislation going on and uncertainty. And we had this, this potential offer, and we looked at it and we go, well, maybe we should entertain this. So, we were going to go just market it ourselves and kind of see, we've got this one offer, but let's see what else is out out there and let's let's see what kind of interest we get, because it was really important to us that, you know, our families that attended our preschool and our staff, they were family to us, right? So we didn't, we weren't just looking for the highest dollar. We wanted someone that would take over the business if that's what was going to happen, that would carry on with the same traditions that we had, right? So first we tried to kind of do it ourselves, and then, you know, we were just solicited by a business broker, and we completely blew them off.
That was a game changer. Yeah.
It was a game changer, but at first we completely blew them off. Like, no, we've got this. I know how to do it. You know, I can handle this. You know, long story short, they're like, just give me a shot. And it was the best decision we've ever made. I mean, we're looking at a 5X difference from what the broker had. You know, they walked us through the entire process. It is 20 times harder than I think we thought it would both be to do this process. The amount of just legal, you know, documents, and the amount of times that you, you know, during the courting process, people are flying out from around the country. You know, you're doing lunches, you're doing dinners, you're doing tours, you're going over financials, you're creating 100 page long prospectus on your company, right? And to try to do this alone, it wasn't a good decision. So yeah, this particular broker did a phenomenal job. We had 15 offers, and then we stopped taking offers because, you know, they were, it was, you know.
Tell me about that broker. Was it somebody that specialized in education? I found that in selling companies, if you have an investment banker or a broker who is known in that realm, then they know who the best acquirers are, and then they can put it out to bid, if you will. That way you have multiple choices, and you can make the best overall decision for the sale.
It's like anything in life. I think everything happens exactly as it should, you know, and this particular broker that came to us, and really the only, he was the only broker that came to us. He is the absolute stud in the industry, right? And he had this Rolodex, to your point, that, you know, he just, he opened it up, just made it, made some phone calls and said, hey, I've got, and we were a premium product, right? We offered a phenomenal school, a phenomenal facilities, amazing teachers. You know, we won best preschool every year, like you brought up. And so anyways, but he opened up his Rolodex, and it was definitely a bidding scenario. So to any founder out there that's looking at exit, you know, there's probably two things you want to do. One, start the process and the relationship building very early, like way before you're ready.
With your investment banker or your broker?
Well, with brokers or with just potential suitors, right? Okay. So like if you're in the tech business, start talking early with companies that are potential acquirers, right? And you don't even need an agenda, and you could still be a startup, right? But start those conversations, get to know them, be where they are. Because when it's time to sell, you know, that's not when you want to be doing the mad dash of, okay, where are we going to get these people? It's like, well, you know, I've got 15, 20 people I've been talking to for the last 5 to 7 years already. So the process is going to be a lot easier. Plus they know your business.
That's so cool. Did you talk to potential acquirers prior to the, I guess, the process of going out and selling the company, or was this more new, or were they people you knew?
Well, so we were out there in the industry, and people knew, certainly knew who we are. We went to events and things like that. However, we probably are going to be one of the more lucky, just because of, you know, one, we had this really premium product in a very competitive space in a great market. But we also had this broker who was able to put it all together. So I think this was just a mix of all of it. If we were to do it over, though, I definitely would have started more on the acquisition, just conversations earlier. And that's what I'm doing now with my other companies that I'm involved in.
And a lot of people tell me, and I've experienced this myself, when you sell a company and the money from the proceeds hits your bank account, it can be like surreal. Describe the feeling when you're like, oh, wow, we now have a lot more money in our bank account.
Well, the process is so intense, right? As you're going through, you're putting together, like I said, 100 page documents. And
yeah, the due diligence associated with selling a significant size company can be pretty big. It's a lot of work. Mm-hmm. It can be almost like a full-time job to pull documents.
That was my full-time job while Lisa was running the schools. Mm-hmm. Was running that, and you know, we go through the process, and it's for me, it was probably the most nerve-wracking thing that I've ever done. It was intensely nerve-wracking. Yeah. The anxiety level was through the roof.
What was the okay? So I've had many conversations like this, and I've experienced this kind of thing myself. Mm-hmm. My worry was always that the deal was going to fall out. Like I was getting so excited about making it happen. Don't mess it up type thing. And then, you know, a lot of times they come back and try to retrade on you. I'm talking to buddies right now that are going through that process of, you know, they, you know, it's like getting a home inspection. They found a couple of things they now want to discuss and have you discount. Those can be stressful.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what it was. Yeah. And you know, really, I mean, it was, and the amount that we were, you know, we're looking at was absolutely life changing. Mm-hmm. So this would change our life. Mm-hmm. So yeah, and it's a long, I mean, 6-8 months. Uh-huh. And so you're like, okay, well, our lives can be completely different, but we have to go. And there was retrades, right? Yeah. And the lawyers get involved, and their job is to find things, right? Even waiting, and so we go through this entire process, and it's like, all right, you know, here's the final number we're settling on. It's going to hit your bank account in 5 days. You've got the day. Even then, it felt surreal. You're like, I don't know if this is actually going to hit the account, right? You're like, you're walking around just as I had this numb feeling. She's a lot more stoic and even keel than me. So thankfully, we got the yin and yang. But, I don't know. You don't know if it's going to hit, right?
Yeah. The unique part about selling a preschool in California is you have to notify all of your families and your staff, and everyone has to have a 30-day notice.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness.
So you have 30 days that you've told all your families and all your staff that
now
they're going to have new
owners. Now if it falls through, that's not good.
Yeah. So that's, I think that was the scariest time where it's like, okay, and then you're just making sure everybody's happy, that they're good with the transition, and you know, trying to kind of just calm the worries of everyone around you.
That you had to notify your customers and your employees prior to the sale. 30 days.
30 days. Yeah,
and they could walk away.
Did anybody stress? Like, were the employees or the customers worried, or did
For sure. I mean, there's definitely the fears of, like, we went with a large corporate company that is, you know, in many multiple states, and you know, we're mom and pop business owners in the community, so you know, that's an adjustment for people, and you know, kind of helping them through that. But it definitely was a company that their curriculum was very aligned to what we do and what we were doing, and just philosophy in general. Our 3-year-old actually goes part-time to company that brought us is Child Time. It's Learning Care Group is the larger company, but our 3-year-old actually attends there now. So
that says a lot about the people that acquired you, that they're still doing a great job.
And that I feel at home when I walk in the door. So, you know, and a lot of our leadership stayed on. I think most of the directors stayed on for multiple years after the exit. Wow. So it actually, you know, worked out really well. But there's definitely, you know, that fear and a lot of people having questions, and small changes just as simple as, like, they keep their lights on during nap time. Mm-hmm. So people were like, how are the kids going to sleep? It's going to be chaos. But, you know, my daughter sleeps great. She sleeps better there than she does at home. So
And imagine during those 30 days, you know, if people would have left because they don't like the lights on or off or whatever, right? And they could fully walk away. Yeah. You know, the buyers, that leaves us then in a position of the marketplace of where, you know, it doesn't look good.
If you're losing directors or customers or anything like that, you know, it definitely changes things. So
it went through, though, and then, you know, to your point, Mark, the day that it hit, you know, I think you're just so numb, and the anxiety is so high, and, you know, the number hits, and I thought it was going to be this crescendo. I thought it was going to be these fireworks, you know, but it was almost like you get to the top and you just needed a nap, you know, you needed to decompress. And, you know, then the fireworks hit after that. I think it probably took a couple months, but
well, you guys are you're young, right? And you said you were younger when you sold it. So, a lot of times people think I'm going to sell my company and retire. I assume that's not the approach mm-hmm. you've taken, because I know all the different, I know some of the different things that you are involved with. Mm-hmm. But how did it change your life, other than like maybe where you focused your career? How else did mm-hmm. it change your life?
Well, my plan was to retire. And Lisa's plan, and mm-hmm. instead of, that lasted what, 2 weeks maybe. Instead, opened up 4 more companies, in right now. I think we're at about 15 companies that mm-hmm. we've invested in on the angel side, mm-hmm. Invested in some venture capital funds. Mm-hmm. The Growth Factory being one of them, which I love, by the way.
Thank you.
I will plug that any and all day. Mm-hmm. Invested in real estate, and you know, so it allowed us to really. You know, from my perspective, diversify, you know, the portfolio, but more importantly, go after things that I'm really passionate about and that I really want to do. I mean, so I'm in education, I'm in health tech, I'm in gov tech, you know, I'm in financial literacy, you know, doing a lot of things that are just kind of, you know, businesses that are really great, but they're passion projects.
Did you guys go out and splurge on anything? Did you go buy a new something, new car?
We went to a nice dinner. We went to Land Ocean. That's like Land our Ocean, celebration
in the mall.
Place.
Yeah. In the mall.
Yes. That's awesome.
Yes.
Celebratory dinner.
Yeah,
did you buy
sure.
dinner for the broker?
I don't, did we? I
yeah,
think
we sent them a
yeah.
very nice
we
bottle of,
yeah.
of champagne.
Yeah.
Yeah, very nice.
That's
bottle
so
of champagne.
Cool.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you mm-hmm. just quiet celebration at the mall.
Yes.
With a nice dinner at Land Ocean.
Yeah.
That's I do awesome. A lot more racing now with cars.
Yeah.
So
oh.
yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, I do some
cars.
Yeah.
You have your own car, like race cars?
Yeah. Yeah. Faster cars that you can take mm-hmm. on a track. So I'll go do track days as much as I can. I'm doing one this week. So.
What car, what do you drive that you like to race?
Either a BMW M5, which is an interesting car to track, uh-huh. Or a McLaren 720S.
Oh, so, nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've never done that before, but I'm going to do it tomorrow or the next day. And we're going down to the golf tournament in Phoenix.
The Waste Management Golf Tournament.
Yeah, and okay. I think we're going to drive Porsches or something around a track. So
nice.
I get to do it for the first time. Mm-hmm. Finally, after all these years, I'm going to try it.
Oh, you're going to be hooked. It's awesome.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. So.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Okay, so now you still have Growing Brilliant. You kept the name.
Yes.
And
yeah.
Now it's become a little bit different. Mm-hmm. Can you describe how it's changed mm-hmm. and, you know, what you're doing with that company today?
Yeah, for sure. And that's an interesting point, too, because we originally really wanted the company that acquired us to take the name. We're like, we want Growing Brilliant to still be there and the preschools to still be named Growing Brilliant. But it actually ended up being a really great thing because we kept the name Growing Brilliant. And we had started, and this was kind of in alignment with this when we had the school still, but we started an online program where we do 45-minute long classes for children at home. So kind of similar to what our parent participation program was like, where, you know, they're learning with the at home with the family, and we keep it really engaging, really exciting. They're using real materials. Mm-hmm. They're using, you know, paint and Play-Doh and creating things with their classmates and with the teacher. So it's super hands-on. So we had that company alongside, and we ended up just kind of keeping that division
okay.
of the company.
And they weren't worried about any potential competitive issues.
No, they didn't want it. No, they didn't want that.
They didn't want
yeah,
that. Keep it.
Yeah, we had
keep
people that did. Yeah, we had people that did, but the, you know, child time, they kind of had their own thing going. Mm-hmm. So,
and it's you know, mm-hmm. so the key mm-hmm. demographic customer for that mm-hmm. Business is actually the exact opposite of what mm-hmm. it is for in-person preschool. So there's 9 million children that are not in preschool in the United States right now, mm-hmm. which is a huge number.
Oh, they're under 5. They're not school age kids.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
9 million under 5.
Ages 2 to 5.
Two to
and there's
five.
Even more if you go 0 to 2, right?
Okay.
So, yeah, that number goes to about 14 million. And so our perfect customer family to attend our program, our at-home program now, is someone who is not actually in preschool, right? And these are families that are stay-at-home parents because, you know, they're just not ready to send their child off to school. They want mm-hmm. to spend those early years with them at home, right? Mm-hmm. And we saw that when we toured, right? So our in-person preschools, you had families that are like, you know, we love what you do, but we're just not ready to drop them off at a school. It's like, no problem. So we serve those families. There's families that, you know, preschool is very expensive. So there's families that, you know, it's just the price point isn't attainable. And there's other families that are going through like different medical issues. Yesterday, one of our families posted this 2-year-old child, such a sweetheart. Lila is her name, and she has stage 4 brain cancer. It's just an unbelievable story. And she can't go to a preschool. So she's attending our program at home. And just the joy that she gets out of the program, she puts her backpack on, you know, gets everything all ready, and then goes over to her computer. It's the cutest thing. Mm-hmm. And attends our class. Mm-hmm. So So we're really about giving children, those 9 million children who don't have access for whatever reason to preschool, the same access without actually having to go to a preschool.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have 7 mm-hmm. grandchildren. One turned 2, I think, yesterday. The other young one is like 3.5. Mm-hmm. So there, I would assume those ages are good for growing brilliant. I told my son and, mm-hmm. and his wife that you guys are coming on the show, nice. So hopefully I get them to listen.
Yeah.
But is that the right age? Because there's also kids that I think are homeschooling that are maybe 10 or 12 or 14.
Yeah, so we're 2 to 6.
Okay.
So, you know, early childhood age. You know, I was a great example of a customer myself. Okay. Because, you know, when we sold, I was pregnant with our now 3-year-old and was able to, one of the benefits was that I was able to stay home for the most part with her up until she's, you know, in a full school now. But before that, I was doing classes with her and we were doing, you know, play groups and other things to kind of keep things well-rounded, but she definitely enjoyed attending the classes and was able to learn a lot through that. And she still attends part-time, so.
Is the business model, obviously you've got less infrastructure, you don't have to go get buildings and things like that. Mm-hmm. So this online approach, does that make it more scalable or what's the plan for that? I don't know how many clients you have today, but is the plan to grow that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. Way more scalable, you know, faster, because like you said, you don't have the infrastructure. Not only that, you know, because we were in the in-person preschool business and now the at-home, the virtual, we see the difference. So the biggest difference is you aren't responsible for the child's care, right? So in preschool, you are their primary caregiver. Yeah,
there's a lot of liability.
There is.
There's just different skills that you have to have.
We've got stories, right?
Yeah.
We've got stories.
Staffing, making sure there's ratio. Yeah. You have to make sure you're always on ratio and have the right teachers.
So for this online program, we're able to focus more on the educational piece. And this is a piece that, you know, when children go to a preschool, there's a lot of benefit to it. Have you ever heard of the HiSCOPE study?
No.
So there was this unbelievable study that was done in the mid-60s, put on by HiSCOPE. And it's a 50-year study. So what they did is basically they wanted to have a long-term study where they gauged the efficacy of children who went to preschool versus not going to preschool. So how effective really is preschool? Mm-hmm. So they followed these children in group A and group B for 50 years.
Wow.
So, and they tracked different metrics on how they were, one, ready for kindergarten. And in that metric, they saw a 2x readiness for children that went to preschool versus children that didn't, right?
Yeah.
They tracked them, in elementary school, high school, even in their career. They had better grades in school. They had a higher chance of getting accepted into a really quality college and then earning more through their careers. And then the final, which I think is the most important metric, is just general overall happiness. They found a metric, you know, a gauge of that too. So very, you know, an unbelievable 50-year study. And the final result of it is, you know, preschool has enormous benefits. So, you know, Growing Brilliant now says, well, if you're not enrolled in an in-person preschool for all those various reasons. Those are very valid. But what are you doing to mitigate some of the things that you may not be getting, right?
So, yeah. How much does it cost to go through your program?
It depends on how many days a week you want to go. Okay. But,
What do you recommend?
5 days is ideal. Mm-hmm. but if they're, you know.
Five days, then how many hours per day?
It's 45 minutes.
Oh, 45 minutes. Yeah. 45 minutes per
exactly.
day.
Exactly. Yeah. So if you're not doing anything else and, you know, that's your school, then I would recommend that. We have other families, you know, like myself, who we have part-time school, then mm-hmm. those other days she's going to the classes. And we work on things, I think sometimes, especially having like an adult one-on-one right next to you, she's learning things mm-hmm. that she might not learn in a large group setting too. You know, like right. I'm sitting next to her making the dots for her little letters and she's tracing them. So we're doing it together.
So as the parent, as the parent, mm-hmm. you're sitting next to her at the computer, mm-hmm. helping as almost as a, like you're in the classroom.
Yeah. So she's getting that one-on-one and we're empowering the parents to kind of be like the teacher. So, mm-hmm. you know, I'm knowing exactly what I need to do with her and how to help her.
What's the ratio between the teacher and how many people mm-hmm. are in the class at one time?
About 15 is our max. Okay. So, but you know, it varies depending on that.
What's ideal?
Class.
What's is one-on-one optimal, but it's mm-hmm. not cost effective? Is that kind of the idea?
I think one-on-one is always optimal, but mm-hmm. in this setting, you have the parent there. So they're really getting the one-on-one and then the teacher's facilitating for the whole group. Yeah. So then, you know, the parent is available. And as they get older, they don't need the parent sitting next to them the entire time. But
yeah, it sounds like it's better than one-on-one.
Yeah.
Kind of, right?
oh,
you
yeah,
have the,
yeah.
the pro and then, you know, you're both going through the curriculum together. So it's mm-hmm. more... I don't know, manageable in terms of reinforcing what they learned mm-hmm. and things like that.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot that, you know, goes into it and a lot of things that they are getting in terms of foundation for getting ready for kindergarten and going into school. You know, just even just staying and listening to a teacher in a group setting for 45 minutes is a skill that, you know, a lot of kids don't have going into kindergarten. And the teacher's pulling their hair out trying to get everybody to sit for circle time. And, you know, you have to build that attention span over time. So,
okay, doctor, mm-hmm. what's the most important thing for the kids to be learning at that age? Is I don't even know what you teach a 2-year-old or a 3-year-old.
There's a lot. I mean, I could go through a list, but I think one of the most important things is just to love school, love learning and love school and feel confident and passionate about learning in general and, you know, not being intimidated by it. Mm-hmm. So I think
like
that's...
learning, mm-hmm. I remember we talked on the show mm-hmm. last time about like learning your shapes as part of like a mm-hmm. progression into geometry.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're building that foundation. So yeah, I mean, there's letter recognition. There's the fine motor skills is huge. I know that we have parents that they have, you know, 3, 4, 5-year-olds even that start classes with us and they've never been handed a pair of scissors or the parent never thought like, oh, give my 3-year-old scissors. Okay.
You're doing that on a 45-minute class.
Yeah. So they're cutting, they're, you know, sculpting, you know, all those things work those muscles that, uh-huh. you know, when they go to write in kindergarten, first grade, their handwriting is so much better because they have that control over those little mm-hmm. tiny muscles in their hands, just like going to the gym.
Wow. What would you say overall? You turn on the news and you hear a lot of negativity about our public education system. Mm-hmm. How would you characterize our public education system? You're obviously preparing people for it. Mm-hmm. What needs to change? What's working? Mm-hmm. Just your thoughts on that. What can we do?
Yeah. I mean, we've had a great experience in the public system. Our older daughter, 11-year-old, is thriving and she loves it. So,
what school district is it?
We're in the Roseville.
Roseville School mm-hmm. District. Yeah. Okay, yeah, uh-huh. that's my school district.
Yeah. When I was a kid. but I think part of it is, you know, she had that foundation and, you know, mm-hmm. enjoyed learning and enjoyed school and the social aspect of it too. So, just making sure they come and they're prepared and confident, I think, is the biggest thing. Mm-hmm. But it is different, you know, that TK and kindergarten look a lot different than a preschool. It's a little bit more structured and, mm-hmm. you know, more time having to sit and listen and less time playing. So, you know, that's something that they have to build that attention span and be ready for.
That's great. Mm-hmm. Anything else on education and you know, early childhood development that you would throw at us?
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's really important, you know, that these kids have fun doing mm-hmm. what they're doing. And that's how you really teach them whatever it is you're trying to teach them, whether it be attention span, whether it be gross motor, you know, executive function, academics, and social and emotional. If you don't if they don't have fun, they're not going to pay attention and they're not going to learn, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that's something that's really important. And parents don't realize, you know, some of these soft skills, such as attention span and the ability just to pay attention in a class, what that really means and what that really does for the child or how it can hurt them, right? If you're not paying attention, if you're not interested in whatever the topic is, you're learning zero of it, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that's really important in whatever it is that they do. And that's one of the things that Growing Brilliant focuses on.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, you are working with some of my teammates on something called Legacy Labs. And that's has to do with education for people who, not the little kids necessarily, maybe the older kids or maybe even adults that have, I guess, not gotten everything they need to get from either their parents directly or through the school system. Can you just share what you're working on at Legacy Labs? Because I think that's interesting and it could be really game changing for families that get involved in that.
Yeah, absolutely. I have a lot of passion for Legacy Labs and financial literacy in general. So, I mean, you talked about what's going on in the public school system and how that's going. One of the ways we are absolutely failing children, and this is across the board, right? I mean, middle school, high school, and even college is financial literacy. So right now, schools are not preparing children to be able to navigate the world of finance, right? So the real world of finance. So balancing, you know, your budget, creating a plan. What is an APR? What is a credit card? You know, how do I really go about getting a loan? Should I get that credit card loan that's 28%? Mm-hmm. What is my credit score going to do for me when I go to get a house later or when I go need to finance a car, right? So all of the things that a human being really needs to know to be an adult in the world, the school system is absolutely not confronting that right
now. There's so much responsibility in terms of finance. You know, you turn 18, you're out of the house, and you're kind of tasked with the idea of figure it out. And if you're not prepared, you could get yourself into a bunch of debt, and now you've dug a big hole. Maybe it's a lot of college debt or something like that. The whole idea is like, hey, let's start building a net worth, building. And I think that's one of the things I like about the name Legacy Labs is really you have these families that. It doesn't matter. You can come from the most successful family in the world and end up with kids that are failing and you're bailing them out.
Right.
And that's a waste. That's a crying shame.
Yeah. And so that's exactly what this program is designed to do. It solve a very, very strong pain point. And the pain point, again, is even adults, we're just not ready. I mean, even when we went and sold our company, you know, I'm like, well, I didn't have the financial literacy knowledge to be able to invest the way that I wanted to invest the right way without just blowing it away, right? I was not taught that anywhere. So yeah, we're going to instill a number of things. One is core financial literacy concepts into children and adults. So start off right now, we're going to start off at ages 18 and go all the way to 60, right? And teach them core financial literacy. And then expand that into investing. And this is applicable to anyone. So we'll talk stocks, bonds, mutual funds, real estate, high yield savings, right? We'll talk angel investing, real estate investing, venture capital. So talk about the who, what, where, and why, and how to do all these things. And the whole idea is to equip them to be able to manage the real world, right, in financial literacy.
So nowadays, now that you've sold your company, you're able to sort of explore new startup type concepts. And so you mentioned that you've been doing angel investing. I think I met you or re-met you at AngelCon, which is something that you participated in. I participated in it. And this is really to try to bring the asset class of venture capital to the forefront of people's minds who have been maybe demystify venture capital to a certain extent and bring some of those investors off the sidelines and get them introduced to angel investing and to venture capital and to the startup world, because it's high risk, but it can be high reward. Mm-hmm. And these are really a lot of the companies that are going to change the world in a big way. So what draws you to these tech companies, right? I know you're involved in a number of tech companies.
Yeah. Angel investing has been one of the most transformative things that I've done as an entrepreneur, as a person, and an investor, because it gives you access. And this was an unintended benefit. I did it because I thought it would be a good investment. But what the real benefit to me has been, the amount of people that are working on these startups and the level of brilliance that they have and the things that they're working on. You know, I now get to sit in a room with people. There could be 100 people. They're working on cancer. Mm-hmm. They're working on ways to make medical procedures faster. They're working on ways to make transportation better, right? They're just so many different use cases and the most brilliant minds. Mm-hmm. And it's so inspiring to be in the room with people mm-hmm. like that. And as an entrepreneur, I learn so much from them. It's like a masterclass every time I get to be around someone, and really I'm evaluating them for an angel investment, right? Mm-hmm. But there's so many different things you get to learn, as an entrepreneur, just because of all those things that I said.
So how do you guys divide up the lanes today? So you've got Growing Brilliant. I know mm-hmm. you mentioned a few startups. You've got one in medical, I know, that you spent a lot of time with. Mm-hmm. I know you have others. Who does what in the hold the family together through through this growth process? Yeah.
That's a good question. So we are running Growing Brilliant together. Okay. Zach mainly, but he has all his other things he's working on mm-hmm. as well too. We did bring on a CEO for Growing Brilliant, so she's amazing, and she's been helping quite a bit with that. So and then I still am pretty involved with the staff and hosting meetings and attending mm-hmm. classes with my daughter, and giving feedback and making sure the program stays where we want it to be. And then all the other things that go along with having two children. Mm-hmm. and lots of animals, lots of pets. We spend a lot of time on our pets too.
How many pets do you have?
We have
dogs?
Two dogs, a bearded dragon, and
bearded, is that a lizard?
Fish. Yeah. And a cat too.
And a cat.
I should have brought him. He's
the bearded
cool.
dragon.
Yeah. He lived at the preschools. He's actually 10 now. He lived at the preschools originally and ended up coming home with
Are
us
those
during
like,
COVID.
Like a foot and a half.
He's not that big. He's like that big. I mean, with tail, his tail. Yeah, with a foot and a half tail, I guess. But his body's like that. So.
We've had pigs, goats, I mean, name it. We've had chameleons.
Now, do you guys have property in Roseville, or is it you have all the pigs and goats out on?
We're on a golf course.
Yeah. So
not
the
enough
pig did come
for,
home with us quite a bit and ate all of our landscaping.
At the school. Okay, gotcha. Yeah.
But we had the animals at the schools,
Very cool, mm-hmm. very cool. Oh, you're on the golf course. You a golfer?
Oh man, I try not to. I try not to. I prefer running the businesses. Yeah. I'm not a good golfer.
All right. So just what did I not? Two last questions. What did I not ask you? And then I actually have a lightning round for you guys too. So what did I not ask you? And then I'm going to go through our lightning round I should have asked you.
I think you asked me everything.
Okay. Anything? Any other words of wisdom for our audience?
No. I think if anyone's either in the grind right now of a startup or running a business, mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of lessons that can be learned, from others along that way. Mm-hmm. I get asked often, well, how do I manage, running four companies and investing in 15 others and doing real estate, all the different things that I do. If I may, I'll give an answer to that. Mm-hmm. And, one, I think you've got to have the desire to do it, right? And a lot of people think they have the desire. But once you get into it, and Mark, this, it's an absolute grind, right? Mm-hmm. So if it feels like work, if you feel like you have to absolutely, rip yourself out of bed every day, you don't want to do it, you might not be on the right path. No, it's not going to be easy, but I think you've got to have the desire to do it, right? Yeah. It's got to be something that just burns within you, or mm-hmm. or you've got to find that for you.
Yeah.
And the second piece is, I think you just need to be very, very consistent and focus on that 80-20 rule, right, mm-hmm. that people talk about. So you're going to get a million things thrown at you on a daily basis. And what your job as an entrepreneur or a business owner or a leader to do is to focus on, well, first that top 80%, but then really boil it down to that top 5%. Mm-hmm. So you're moving the needle every day on things that actually move the needle for your company. Mm-hmm. And as entrepreneurs, you know, we could easily spend our time on the bottom 80%, but really focus on that top 80% and then top 5% on a daily basis, and then put mm-hmm. processes in place that allow that to happen, right? Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
Yeah, I think just staying flexible in general, because, you know, it doesn't always go in the path that you envision when you first start out. And sometimes it can be really great. You know, I didn't envision us ever having 4 locations and then selling those locations. Mm-hmm. So I think just staying flexible in what your long-term plans are and being open to opportunities as they come up. So,
I love it. I love yeah. it. Okay, so here is my ChatGPT. I want one word answer or short answer from each of you. Mm-hmm. And it's 10 questions. Mm-hmm. And this lightning round is brought to you by The Growth Factory.
All right.
So here we go. One word to describe childhood today.
Oh, busy.
Love.
Love it. Biggest skill a child needs for the future.
Love of learning.
Love of learning.
Mm-hmm. An even keel.
Hmm. I love how you guys aren't like duplicating each other's answers. We get 2 for the price of 1 here. Yeah. Favorite children's book?
Ooh. Oh, man. I guess the one that we're reading almost every day with our 3-year-old, The Hug Machine. I don't know if you've seen that one or heard of that one.
I haven't seen that one. Sounds
it's
good.
Cute. It's about a little boy that runs around giving everybody hugs.
We're going to say the same answer, The Hug Machine. Yeah. It's very topical.
Yeah.
I have one that most people have never heard of. I actually read it on my show, I don't know, probably 5-7 years ago. What do you do with an idea? Mm-hmm. And it walks a child through... you know, having this imagination, have an idea surface, and then what do you do with it? And so it tells the story of what this child does with the idea. And there's an educational component to it that kind of encourages you to share mm-hmm. your ideas.
Well, if I may then. Okay, so with my older child, we read The Daily Stoic. She's 11. Yeah. The Daily Stoic, by mm-hmm. far.
And that's like a little one-page thing that kind of gets... kind of philosophical.
Yep, one philosophical bite a day from Stoicism.
Oh, mm-hmm. I love it.
Huge fan.
Okay, so... Next question is one parenting tip you swear by.
Oh, pausing and taking your time to respond when you're.
I wish I would have learned that one.
Yeah. When you're frustrated, like not letting them, not meeting them at their frustration, like bringing it down.
Yeah, that mm-hmm. that goes for like. Yeah, that's daily life.
Yeah, being stoic, right? Yeah, and not allowing your emotions to get the better of you because they're going to learn. Mm-hmm. They're going to learn that. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Best age for starting school?
As early as possible.
Okay, but before 2?
Yeah, I mean, we had infants, but mm-hmm. Depends on what you're doing with them. It has to be age appropriate. But starting more formal school... 3-4
Okay. Mm-hmm. And one word for what makes a great teacher?
Passion.
Mm. Empathy.
Empathy. Mm-hmm. I love it. Favorite childhood memory of yours?
Oh, man. That's going way back. I think the first time my parents took me to Disney World.
Wow.
Yeah, I was 3. That was a good trip. We're going to be going to Disney World in 2 weeks with our girls.
I've never been to Disney World, but I just got back from Disneyland with the 2 and the 3-year-old.
Yeah.
And it was awesome. Yeah. I haven't been to Disneyland in a long time.
Yeah.
Disney World's better than Disneyland?
I wouldn't say that. We're Disneyland people, especially because we're in California. It's easy. Mm-hmm. But my 11-year-old is like, we go to Disneyland twice a year. Yeah, so she's like, she's like, I gotta, you know, see something different. So she really put in the request for Disney World this year. So we're going to try it. So.
Very cool. Very cool. Best childhood?
Yeah, it was, we took an RV trip. We lived in Wisconsin. I'm from Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. So RV trip from Wisconsin to Florida to go to Disney World. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. All right. One word to describe growing brilliant today.
Ooh, that's a good one. cutting edge.
Mm.
Wow. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Effective.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Very cool. Okay, so biggest challenge for childhood development in 2030?
Mm. I would say it'll probably be attention spans.
Oh.
Yeah. I know it's one word. Can I elaborate
yeah.
on that?
Yeah.
So, you know, classes like what we do, it's different than like just screen time watching Cocomelon or, you know, some high YouTube. Energy YouTube, you know, shorts where they're watching a new thing every 30 seconds. So it's definitely like that attention span that doesn't need attention span because you're scrolling and you're, you know, constantly getting these hits of new things. So that's different than what our 45 minute long classes look like with the teacher and with the parent and that engagement. So it definitely, I think there's going to be more.
Social media
of that.
Is one of the, mm-hmm. I guess, things that is changing our attention span.
Oh yeah. I think it, yeah, kind of makes everybody lose attention
yeah.
quickly.
Yeah. It definitely.
2030.
Definitely mm-hmm. AI. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Especially mm-hmm. as, you know, an angel who sees mm-hmm. all of the.
Is AI coming. More good than bad?
I think it needs to be used in the right way, but I also think it's inevitable at this point. I mean, you know, yeah. Mark, you and I both see a lot of things before they come out to the marketplace, right? Mm-hmm. So AI, you know, good, bad, or indifferent, it's coming. It's not going to be stopped. So I think, you know, one of the things that we do in for Growing Brilliant, for example, you know, we don't use AI in our class at all. You know, we support some of the enrollment process or, you know, mm-hmm. some of that, but no, we have real teachers. And I think teaching real kids, you know, in real time. So and that's very intentional. So I think there's going to be, use cases for AI, and there's going to be use cases to absolutely not use AI.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. We're invested into an AI company in the Growth Factory called Strived, and they they help administrators and teachers understand the needs of each individual child because they're all different, and they use AI to basically take the data from the child's career mm-hmm. and help more customize the offering so that mm-hmm. we teach better because we know the student better.
Yep. Yeah. And they were actually an AngelCon. They went through AngelCon and they did phenomenal. They mm-hmm. took second place. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's a great example of using AI around the child, mm-hmm. but they're not, the child actually doesn't know that AI is even being used because mm-hmm. it's there to support the teacher.
Yeah.
So that's a perfect example of how you really can use it to just benefit and mm-hmm. target curriculum and lesson mm-hmm. Without, you know, overloading the actual child. They get, mm-hmm. they'll get enough AI in their life.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
The teacher's using it as a tool. I mean, the that's more right. data mm-hmm. that the teacher has and the more mm-hmm. data collection you have, and you don't have time to do that as a teacher, you know, right, you're right. managing the class. So
if you knew that that yeah. child had these things going up in their life when they get to the sixth grade, mm-hmm. okay, I can see exactly what happened mm-hmm. in a nutshell with bullet points mm-hmm.
yep.
and help guide the curriculum. Mm-hmm. So yeah, mm-hmm. that's, I think it has a lot of potential.
Yeah.
Okay. Last one. One word that describes a happy child.
Jumping.
Mm.
Our girls jump when they're excited and happy. Yeah, they both do it. Yeah.
That's awesome.
They've got like this little jump that they do when they're That's really awesome. Happy about
this something. Isn't going to be one word, mm-hmm. but being comfortable being mm-hmm. themselves, mm-hmm. right? That's how you can truly tell if yeah. they're comfortable in their own and being themselves around, you know, whoever it is they're around.
Mm-hmm. I love it. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. Well, thank you for being yourselves today and joining me on the show and coming back for the 10-year yeah. anniversary show. A lot has changed for all of us, and yeah. It's amazing what you are all doing. I appreciate the partnership that we have with you at the Growth Factory, and anyway, thanks. You're just a treasure. To me, this like success breeds success. That's what it's all about. So to see where you started from to where you are today and now how you're reinvesting back into our region or our young people or tech people. It's just amazing. So thank you for what you do.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And thank you. I love your backyard mm-hmm. advantage mm-hmm. and what you've done and are continuing to do for the community. Yeah. I drink the Kool-Aid. Yeah. I'm an evangelist for it. I love it. And we love you. We love
your actual backyard too.
We oh, thank you.
Very nice to be there. Yeah.
Quite literally.
Yeah, for sure. Just a couple people.
Yeah, yes, yes. Well, thank you. Mm-hmm. Again, I hope the next 10 years are mm-hmm. just as prosperous, if not a lot more.
Yeah.
Likewise.
Thank you. Thank you. You too.
And to all you out there fighting the good fight for entrepreneurship and for the backyard advantage, and of course, all of you out there fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life. Here at Haney Biz, at Mark Haney Show, and the Growth Factory, we're never above you. We're never below you. Always by your side.
This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in the segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.